Good morning. We are here at St. Vincent's Arch Abbey in La Trobe, Pennsylvania. And I'm here with Brother Benedict, who has taught the Psalms for many years. And I thought we would have a little interview with him to find out, you know, how did this all come about, these Psalms, and what might be one of his favorite. And then we're going to take it from there and see where it leads us. And we will be short. Thank you, Brother Benedict. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Gene, for the opportunity to explore the Psalms. And it's true that the Psalms have been part of my life for probably over 50 years now after joining the monastery. But I think you're interested more in the origin of the Psalms and how they might go way back in the time of the Bible. And when we pick up a Psalm today, we're actually picking up some prayers that are as old as 3,000 years. Not that many Psalms probably were written 1,000 B.C., but they're often traced to David and as the writer of the Psalms. But today we know that David probably wrote very few of the Psalms, and he lived around 1,000 B.C. And he's the one who is supposedly organizer of temple liturgy. But if you recall, too, the temple wasn't built yet when David was king. That was the role of Solomon, his son, to do. But anyway, David's name is associated with the Psalms and with the liturgy. It goes back 1,000 B.C. And so the 150 Psalms that we have today were written over a long period of time, probably bridging from 1,000 B.C. to about 200 B.C. So that's a long period of time. There was like the Psalms reflect the history of the Jewish people, the Israelite people, the Hebrew people, and they're sort of a capsule form of that history, or their life or relationship or covenant with God. And so if we go, I'm trying to, yes, David and liturgy and temple, these things sort of go together, but a lot of them aren't simultaneous. It takes time to develop and so on. Trying to think of, you know, they say that one or two of the Psalms that David might have written. Some think that perhaps the Good Shepherd Song, which is a favorite of a lot of people, and many people still know by heart and start their day and close their day with that psalm, perhaps was coined by David because he was a shepherd, as you recall. When they were looking for the king, they interviewed all his brothers, and they said, "No, there's still somebody missing. Oh, that's David. He's out with the sheep. He surely is not the one you would want as king." And they said, "No, bring him on, you know, bring him on." But he spent a lot of time, you know, of his youth, tending and the flock and stuff like this. So chances are, but many, many people were shepherds. So, he could well be the author of that particular psalm. But other than that, it's pretty hard to pinpoint, nor should we try to pinpoint every psalm. The one that I think is most easily dated is, I think, Numbers 137, I believe it is. You know, when we were captives in Babylon, there we sat, there we wept, we hung up our harps or our instruments on the tree, you know, and our captives asked us to sing a song for them, entertain them. And they says, how could we do that? We're in a foreign land. You know, we don't sing well in a foreign land, and so on. But it sort of pinpoints that time, the time of the exile, not to be confused with the Exodus. So around 538 or so B.C., a very critical time in Israel's history, the time of her exile, that a number of psalms, and some would say many psalms, originated during the exile, especially the laments, because if we look at the different types of psalms, we see that the laments and the hymns or praises dominate the Psalter. And so there were many occasions for Israel to rejoice, many occasions for her to lament. And that's why it's easy for us to identify with those psalms. That's why the church adopted the psalms And that's why we can still pray the Psalms with much relevance, because if I put myself in their place, you know, I too can identify with these different emotions, the gamut of emotions that runs through the Psalms. They're very down to earth. They're very visceral. They're very sensual. They're if you look for like different parts of the body that are mentioned in the Psalms, you know, it's a very corporeal, very down to earth. It's you know, they mention the hand, the feet, the heart, the liver, the bowels. You know, it's amazing how close and down to earth they are. And as far as my favorite psalm, I have a couple of them actually, and 8 might be my favorite psalm, Psalm 8. Another one is 29, another one is 104. But the common thread to all those is that they deal with the God as creator, and God as the creator of nature. And so nature rather than history plays a great part in this. Today we talk a lot about ecology, and the Psalms, they mention the beautiful outlay of the Creator, the different realms, you know, of creation and so on. But anyway, Psalm 8 is especially dear to me because it tells us how great we are, in a sense, and yet it's telling us we are great because of our relationship to the Creator. And it's a short psalm, but right at the heart of the psalm is this verse about that you have made us little less than gods, or you have made us little less than angels. The translations differ. It puts us humans on a very lofty level, not in a prideful way of challenging God so much, but like we are the products, we are his image and likeness, and it just pays great tribute to us, but we then reflect that back to the Creator in whose image we are created. And God is, you know, important for laying out the universe, the cosmos, the sun, the moon, the stars. Yet when he looks at his prime creation, it is we humans who are at the center stage. And then we have a role to play. We have a responsible role to play. We are co-creators. We are, you know, we are, I think sheep are mentioned there, and the birds of the air and the fish of the sea and so on. We have been given dominion, and that's a word that's been like mistranslated often because it gives many the impression we're to dominate nature. You know, we're to cut down the rainforest. We're allowed to do anything we want, when it's just the opposite. God is turning creation over to us to be his help, his co-creators, to be good stewards, good guardians of his creation. And today, I say ecology and environmental studies would naturally like hop upon a psalm like this to show that they are in concert with the biblical thinking. And so that is probably my favorite. And I like Psalm 29 too, because it's perhaps the oldest psalm. The psalms are not arranged in chronological order, where Psalm 1 would be the oldest. No, they're collected, and they're collected from different periods of time. But the oldest one could be Psalm 29, which pays tribute to God as the God of the storm, or the God who's in control of the storm. And many think that this was a Canaanite hymn before it was adapted or adopted by the Israelites. And so you asked at the beginning, like, when did these psalms begin? Well, people before the Hebrews even had psalms or something akin to them. And if you recall, when the Jews were liberated, the Hebrews were liberated from Egypt, they entered the land of Canaan. That is the gift that of the land that God gave to them. And so there's a lot of contact with the Canaanites, Canaanite liturgy, Canaanite gods. And the Hebrews are put in a precarious position, like what to take from that culture, what not to take, very much like us today. What do we take from humanism? What do we take from secularism? How much do we dialogue with the world? Should we turn our back on the world, you know, and so on. So this is probably a borrowed hymn from the Canaanites, who had a storm god whose name was Baal, whose name appears often in Scripture as the rival god of the Hebrew god. And so what these, what the psalmist probably did, he says, hey, we like the lyrics, we like the music, we're going to put that into our hymnal, okay? Only we're just going to make one change. We're going to cross out the name Baal, the Canaanite god, and we're going to put in Yahweh, the personal name of our own God. Everything else will keep the same. Because, and that too is interesting, because people before the Hebrews, call them pagans, later call them Gentiles or whatever, we all have access to the beauty of nature and creation, the watching of the storm. And this particular, if you try to like localize it, it depicts a storm coming up over the Mediterranean probably, and then coming inland into Israel and crossing through that, and then dying out in the desert region and so on. But the psalmist is sort of depicting what might happen in a stormy situation back in his time, but he's also using it in a more perhaps symbolic way too, you know, to like our own weathering of the storms that come into our own life. And I know to this day I'm still fascinated and somewhat fearful of the storm. You know, when you get a tremendous thunderstorm or windstorm or whatever, lightning, thunder, and this psalm mentions lightning and thunder. And they weren't scientists enough to distinguish the two. They always used lightning and thunder interchangeably, whereas we would count the seconds between the flash and the noise and then determine how far away it is and whether you have to run to grandma's house for cover or something. In fact, I had an aunt who, when a storm came up, she was so terrified. She grabbed all of us, you know, and said, we're going to the neighbor's house. I don't know how that would have saved us, but off we go. You know, she carted, not, didn't cart us. Come follow me. She was deadly afraid of the storm. But fear and fascination, and that gets back to the idea I always liked associated with religion, Rudolf Otto's idea of the holy, you know, something that is at one and the same time fearful and fascinating. And a storm is a real good example of that. And so many things in our life, you know, the scary things, relationships, death, taking a risk, you know, all these things are at one and the same time fearful and fascinating. And that's perhaps when we are closest to the holy, you know. Or I ask the students, like, when's the last time you trembled? Chances are you were in the presence of the holy. Like, when do we shake? When do we tremble? Usually in a, sort of a life-death situation, or again, a relational situation. It's like a barometer, for our own well-being or our state of mind or something. You can take your own like spiritual temperature sometimes by the amount of trembling you do and how one reacts to that. In 104, if we still have time, I don't know if we have time. Okay, just 104 is a much longer psalm, but it sounds a lot like the days of creation. It's divided up into seven parts, and it resembles the 7 days of creation in Genesis 1. But it also imitates a hymn or a psalm that was Egyptian in nature or in origin. And so the Hebrews borrow from a lot of these people and then adapted it, sometimes merely by changing one word or saying that, hey, like we agree. You know, they spent a lot of time in Egypt, so this stuff sort of by osmosis gets into their bones, and they see where even the Egyptians are onto something good, you know. They too recognize the power and the majesty of the Creator. And isn't it strange that they have like also a psalm very similar to this 104, actually influenced 104, but it also resembles the 7 days of creation in Genesis 1. And so sometimes if you just want to like a treat, you know, to like a nature walk or something through the Psalms. Pick up 104, and each day, you know, and then it saves, of course, it saves the humans for last. It builds up to the pinnacle, to the human person as God's, like, you know, ultimate creation, and so on. And so I don't know if that's a good place to end. I've been rambling a little bit, but you know, it's a fitting closure also to recognizing God in our lives and being able to identify with all those Psalms. Next time we'll do the rest of the 140, 150 next time. Might get another interview.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah. This was terrific. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jane. Thank you.